from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
The Junks are presented by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. It's time now to head out to the BetQL guest hotline. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com. We welcome in the first of 3 Washington Post staff members. Barry Zwerluga is a late booking at 8:20. He's coming on after Nikki Javala, and Chelsea Janes joins us at 9:20. But Nikki Javala, Commanders reporter for the Washington Post, joins us now. Good morning, Nikki. How are you?
I'm good. Wow, you really picked like the worst one first. Jeez.
No, not at all. Please, you're short.
Oh my God.
Short selling.
It only goes up from here. It only goes up from here.
We appreciate having you on. I know today is going to be a crazy day for you guys. By the way, has anything happened yet? I mean, like, what? How do you expect the day to go?
I would expect there be a lot of time spent on Twitter, just watching the trickle of news of guys that have been let go. So I would imagine it starts soon if it hasn't already. I think this regime gets things going pretty early, as we saw with the Cade York trade at around 7:30. So yeah, I would imagine it's underway already.
Can you remind us? They didn't sign York to a multi-year deal, did they?
They traded for him, so he already had a deal.
Yeah.
He already had a deal with the Browns, 1-year deal.
Okay. So if they do find a better kicker with a better resume, they could conceivably, even though he's supposedly done nothing, I assume he's made most of these kicks. You know, he obviously went 2-for-2 in the game. If they saw somebody markedly better, they could easily swap him out.
Oh, absolutely. And like they have the number 2 spot in the waiver claim order through week 3.
Which is huge.
And Cade York, it's huge. And Cade York's, that trade, they gave up a conditional 7th. The condition is he has to be on the roster at least 2 games. So they could carry him through the opener, move on, and never give up a thing.
Wow. Okay. So that's very possible.
Nikki, we were discussing this earlier. I'm looking at your column that you share with Sam Fortier, where you projected the 53-man roster. You have the Commanders keeping 4 running backs. You have them, obviously, with Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler, Jeremy McNichols and Kaz Allen, cutting Chris Rodriguez, and EB was mentioning that could potentially happen. How has he fallen out of favor with this staff? He's only been there a couple of years now.
I don't know that he's really fallen out of favor. I just don't think he was viewed in the same regard as the previous one. They picked him, in the 5th round, I would say? They had a 3rd-round grade on him, they said. But this staff is clearly viewed a lot of their picks much differently. So I think all the moves that happened today are just the start. I think there will be another wave of moves through waiver claims, potential trades. I think there will be multiple iterations of their 53 before we get to the Tampa game.
Looking back on the Jahan Dotson deal, how surprising is it for you heading into camp? Everybody assumed this guy's going to be the number 2 receiver. Was there something beyond his lack of production in the preseason?
I think he just wasn't the great fit for what this organization was looking for, what this regime was looking for, not the same type of player, and they're sort of loaded at slot. So they were getting offers for him and decided to move on. The only surprising part to me, honestly, was the fact that they sent him to Philly. Mm-hmm. They said they got multiple offers for him, which kind of speaks to the level of offers they were getting. If they essentially sent him to a division rival and only upgraded a mid-round pick and got 2 sevenths in exchange. So that was a surprise for me. I mean, on the surface, the move shouldn't have been that big of a surprise. I mean, it's an underperforming, undersized receiver who was perhaps overdrafted at the start. Moving on from him isn't that big of a deal ordinarily, but this is a former first-round pick. There were high expectations. And then you send them to one of your biggest rivals.
Yeah, it's very strange. So just at the receiver position, McLaurin, Brown, Oz, McCaffrey. All right, that's four. I think Crowder will make it because he returns punts. Now, I know they've tried to use other people during the preseason, but I think Crowder will be that guy. That's five. Talk to me about a couple other receivers that you think have a shot. Does Bryant have a shot to make it to the active roster, or do you think they'll try and stash him on the practice squad?
Byron Pringle?
No, Bryant. Martavis Bryant.
Oh, Martavis Bryant, yeah. I still think practice squad is probably more likely for him. And I think they bank on the fact that, you know, he was out of the league for, what, he was released in May from the Cowboys, didn't play an active game then. And even so, nobody picked him up, so maybe they feel like that he could clear waivers despite having a fairly productive two games in the preseason. So I think that would be my guess. Mm-hmm. But they do need a bigger body receiver, and there will be some on the waiver wire. Like one like that came out yesterday who's expected to be cut is Tim Patrick from Denver. He's dealt with a number of big injuries, but he is a bigger receiver and sort of a deep threat, and he's good when healthy. So guys like that, I could see them totally looking at, and I would think that means Bryant ends up on practice squad, but we'll see.
Where did Javon Davis do enough? I feel like he did to secure a spot. But then I hear other people feel like there's still some possibility that there could, you know, maybe he doesn't end up there on the roster. Where do you feel he is at this point?
I think he makes it. The only way I think he doesn't make it is if they decided to trade him. And I do think he definitely has value. I would think he has value. I mean, just because of his potential. And that's largely the appeal to this group with him is, you know, here's a sort of a freak athlete. You know, can we mold him into this edge rusher? And I thought he did really well, you know, sort of transitioning to the edge and really taking to the TJ. I think what they really liked is just how he embraced the transition. Like, he really went all in. You could see him after practice working extensively with Ryan Kerrigan and Darrell Tapp. So, like, he really put in the work. And even by NFL standards, he is pretty rare to find a guy that size with that kind of speed and power. So I would think he has value, but I also think he has a lot of value to this team, and they kind of want to see where it goes. And there's not a whole lot of risk there. I mean, he's on an expiring deal. If he does great, you try to keep him. If not, you move on.
Right. You know what struck me, and this is bizarre because it was the third game, and it was a lot of the backups and guys that won't be around playing, but I felt like they were super aggressive defensively, and I'm like, you know what? This is going to be a totally different defense than that sort of passive style that Jack and Ron have had here for the last few years. It was the closest thing to when Greg Williams was here that I can remember. And this was friggin' preseason. Maybe I'm crazy. I'm not an X's and O's guy. I couldn't break down any film with you. But I just get the sense that they're going to pressure. And they're going to need to because our back end ain't great.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And that's sort of the hallmark of Dan Quinn's defense. It's this attacking style. Mm-hmm. And even though we saw mostly reserves in preseason, we did see the starters in the joint practices, and it was the same. It was impressive. Like, the way the front got after the Jets, I mean, in particular, in the second half of that workout was when they looked the best, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
John Allen, Deron up front. So, yeah, I think I do like how this group does seem to know how to utilize the talent they have. I feel like most coaches say we want to get the best out of our players. We want to tailor the system to our personnel. Not all of them do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can really see that this group is. You can see it with the positional changes. It's not just Jamin Davis. It's Dominique Hampton moving from safety to linebacker. It's finding ways to get the most out of Mike Sainer still, who I think could move around all over. I think we could see him outside at corner more. He's played a little bit there, but I think he's capable of playing all over the secondary. There's safeties. You get Chin. I think he could. He's going to be a key player back there. Lulu, who's sort of a hybrid linebacker. So they understand how to maximize the value of these guys, and you see that in the way they play.
Nikki, you have two more of Ron's rejects on the offensive line not making the cut. Stromberg and Daniels. Talk about how underwhelming they were. And how worried is the front office and the staff about Brandon Coleman being ready for week one? Because I know they're counting on him.
Yeah, I'll start with it. I don't know that anybody really understands the Braden Daniels pick. I mean, didn't understand it when they selected him and still don't understand it. I mean, it felt like it was a struggle to get him on the field even early on in camp when they were scratching the bottom of the depth chart at O-line. So I don't know that it would be a terribly big surprise that they would move on from him. He's just, I don't know. They're just not the right fit. I would say he's just sort of a raw player who's not quite there. Stromberg, I wasn't sure how they would view Stromberg just because of, I mean, he dealt with an injury almost the entirety of his rookie season. But I, you know, he too hasn't gotten a ton of time there. They could keep him on as sort of a guard at center. But I think if they do initially, it would be just to get him through the first 24 hours before they see who's available on the wire. And then what was the other one?
Oh, Brandon Coleman.
Yeah.
Brandon Coleman, yeah. I heard that they're expecting him to be ready for week one, but we'll see. I mean, it is for an offensive lineman to be dealing with a shoulder pectoral type of injury, not great.
Mm-hmm.
He missed the entirety of the preseason, and even if he is healthy for week one, do you want to start him right off the bat, having not worked against any other opponent and not really doing team drills for the last 3 weeks?
Hmm.
I don't know. But there does seem to be more optimism there than maybe I initially thought.
Nikki, can you guess, because I know they're not showing you guys a lot, and now you're going to see even less, right?
Yeah.
How's this offense going to look? Like, I'm pretty confident that Jaden's going to be pretty studly, and he's going to do some dynamic things for us. But, I mean, like, I feel like they haven't emphasized Eckler at all. And if he's just a high ankle sprain, heel away from being last year, you know, 2 years ago's guy. I mean, we could have one of the best offseason pickups. Maybe I'm getting carried away here, but I mean, just like 2 years ago, he's considered one of the best, versatile backs in the game. We haven't highlighted him at all. Brian Robinson looks like he's running as good as he's ever run here in Washington. I don't know. Like, what kind of offense are we going to employ here?
Yeah, I think health is going to be the key for this group no matter what. I mean, because so many of your key pieces have dealt with injuries in the past and their best play has been, you know, a couple of years behind them. Zach Ertz, another one who's looked great in camp. Eckler's looked great in camp, but it always comes with the caveat of can they stay healthy? I think they have a chance to be good. I won't go so far to say great. It would be awesome if they totally surprised me and proved me wrong. But, you know, there are some concerns, at least to me. I mean, obviously the line, especially at tackle, both sides really. Because it's not just the starters there, it's the depth. There's not a whole lot there. And that's where you really hope they pick up some guys on the wire and just really sort of bolster the group. But I don't know that Jaden has enough skilled players around him. Terry is Terry, of course. Again, Zach Ertz looks good when healthy. Eckler looks good when healthy. I think Brian Robinson is still sort of underrated, in my opinion, just because he has shown to be a really good pass catcher, even in camp and preseason. And I think he can be more versatile than, you know, the team has you know, in the way this team has used him so far. But, you know, we don't really know what they have in Diami yet, because I think Diami has generally peaked in training camp. You need to see it more consistently in the regular season. And the other receivers behind those two are sort of unknowns, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Luke McCaffrey is still sort of raw. Olamide has looked great. He's a veteran. But in this scheme, we don't know. So you'd like to see them get more size there. So it's, you know, I say this and I hate it because it's vague, but I could see them looking similar to Houston. I could see them being 4-13. You hope, obviously, that doesn't happen, but this is sort of what this team is. They're a total unknown, and I think they kind of like that they're a surprise and people don't know what to expect.
Right, Nikki, right. Thanks so much for the time. We know you're going to be super busy on cutdown day. We do appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep, that's Nikki Jabvala. Follow her on Twitter, at Nikki Jabvala, throughout the day for updates. Coming up next, we'll talk to Barry Zwerluga about his latest column in the Washington Post about the potential of Juan Soto's return to the Washington Nationals.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back to the Junks. Time to head back out to the BetQL guest hotline. Say good morning to a late booking. We appreciate his time. Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post. We were talking about his column, the next step in the Nationals rebuild. Bring back Juan Soto. What's up, Barry? Good morning.
Stir it up, guys. Let's go.
Barry, I'm the only one that says it's possible. The rest of these guys think it's unfathomable.
It's a tough word to say.
Unfathomable.
How about this? Impossible. I'll throw that one out
tough.
There.
I do not think it's impossible. I do not think it's impossible. And in fact...
All right, what percentage would you put it on?
Improbable, I think it's a good
word. Oh, I'd put it at like...
10%?
5 to 8%.
Yeah, okay.
Something right. In there.
That's like, basically impossible.
That's not impossible. Here's the thing. This is not just about Juan Soto and a very narrow view, you know, considering he's here and Cruz is up and, you know, he doesn't walk in here in a Yankees uniform all the time. This is the first time that's happened. It's the right time to look at it. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I think, and I'm going to make this point over and over and over the rest of the year and going into the offseason, like it's time to spend again. And JP mm-hmm. spent a lot of time going through the payrolls when the Nats were competitive, and I've done that in the past. I mean, I think there was a 7-year stretch where they were outside of the top 10 only once, and that was like 12th. So they've done it before, and I think they need to do it again. And I think, I know, Jason, you were talking about their business and, yep. and how they were hit during COVID, and that's all very real. But I think it's also on them to treat the team not as a burden, but be creative and spend money to make money, and not just look at everything like a line item and a drag on the business, but think about what could build the thing into not just a winner in 2025 or 26, but a sustained winner like they had for the better part of a decade, when they grew players from within, but also, frankly, you know, brought in lots of pieces. And I think that the ones we point to are Jason Worth at 7 years and $126 million and Max Scherzer at 7 years and $210 million. They've shown a willingness to do that when Ted Lerner was writing the checks. I think they need to show a willingness to do that again, and not just on those pieces, but on, you know, they signed Daniel Murphy, they signed Adam LaRoche. They, you know, you go out and you can't do this all with players in their first 6 years of service time. It doesn't work that way. You've got to augment them. And so Soto's the big fish, the big target, the big whale this year, and I think it makes sense to say you should be competitive for him because he's not some random guy who's a free agent and is an excellent player. He's a guy you grew yourself, and he knows what it was like to win here. But beyond that, there's a bigger picture way of thinking that I think it's their responsibility and it's malpractice to not be competitive financially again so that you draw more people and make more money.
All right, I think that that's a fair case, but Barry, my argument, you know, it sounded like you listened to the segment, would be that I don't think that they need to have the highest guys, you know, they don't have to have the number one highest paid player to prove that they want to be competitive, right? They can still sign other stars at half that value and still be, you know, sprinkle it in and be competitive. And the larger point is, because I don't think they've all of a sudden turned into the A's and they're just going to be a minimum spending team and just hope they can win the young guys. I don't think that's it. I think they're waiting for the moment. So, and I think we agree there. I just don't think they necessarily, the moment for them is to spend $600 on a guy, one guy. The other part, go ahead. And then I want to bring up one other point.
My counter there is simply that in my mind, that guy is a different guy. It's not just the best free agent in a specific free agent class. It is
a special guy,
a generational hitter. And Eric, I think also a point, and Aaron Boone said this yesterday, and I included this in the column, like it's very, very important to note where Juan Soto is in his development as he hits free agency. He does not turn 26 until October. Right. So you are, if you're signing him up for 13 years, his age is 26 to 38 seasons or 39, you're not getting bogged down by all those terrible outlying years when the guy's past his prime.
I mean, I agree.
Aaron Judge is awesome right now. Yeah. Think about it. Aaron Judge came up when he was 24. That's 5 years after Juan Soto. So you're buying the best of Juan Soto. So I agree with the idea that, like, you don't always have to get the biggest, shiniest object like each offseason, but this one is different. To me, he's not the best free agent this offseason. He's the best free agent outside Otani in a 10-year span.
Okay. But here's my ultimate, rest of my case. He's a Boris guy. And Juan was – I feel like Ron was burned by him the last time because I think if you gave him a truth serum, Juan would have told you, I'd rather have stayed here. But so maybe that's an argument that he'll be more forceful this go-around. But Boris's history is he's going to go to the highest bidder, and there's no scenario on earth where we're going to outbid the Mets. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that's what I would say, Barry, is you made some great points about how this is a difference –
how special
he is. Different player. We just don't see guys this dominant, this young. And it's a great time. But those other teams that have a reputation and more money to spend or are willing to spend more, they know that too. They see
it. For sure.
They see it.
For sure. And I guess my point would be they are coming down in payroll so much. You lose the Corbin money. Mm-hmm. Strasburg is what it is. Like you've got to eat that. That's fine. But there is nobody on this roster in 2025, who's a veteran signed to a deal of at least $10 million annually. Nobody. Now, you're going to have to pay you know, C.J. Abrams in arbitration. Like, some of these guys will get to their arb years and like that.
Right.
It's just like real estate. You get paid by comps and the salary goes up. And I mean, this is the last year of Soto's arbitration. He's making $30 million a year because he's such an outlier in that way. So that will increase your payroll. But I don't think there's a reason they can't be competitive with Steve Cohen in this situation, because they don't have Francisco Lindor's contract and they're not paying all these other big, you know, there's not other pieces around that are expensive at the moment. So, Jason, I totally agree with you. Like, dollar for dollar, can you compete with Steve Cohen, who has said what the learners have never said, which is, the Mets are my side business. I don't need to make money here. I make money in my crazy, crazy hedge fund world. That's different than the learner's commercial real estate market, which is much more, you know, bricks and mortar and much more traditional. But I think in this instance, like, can they tie, should they be able to tie a reasonable offer? And reasonable in this case probably goes up to $600 million, right? Should they be in position, because of the way the rest of their roster is constructed, to be competitive with those guys? Sure. Are they going to outbid the Yankees or the Mets by $100 million? They're not. I just think that they should not play the victim like all our people go elsewhere. They should be aggressive. And you make the Boris point, like, Jason Worth was a Boris client. Max Scherzer was a Boris client. Like, they've done it before. They could do it again.
Yeah, that was my point earlier, and you reinforced it. Moving over to the Commanders, what's your level of excitement heading into the season?
I mean, I think Daniels makes it pretty interesting. I'm not like wowed by the coaching staff, and I shouldn't say that. I was, you know, Paris for the whole. Like I said, I shouldn't say that, because I kind of whiffed on the preseason, having been at the Olympics, so it's not like I've broken down tape. I was of the mind that I really wanted an offensive coach to come in with the new quarterback, because then you know, if the quarterback takes off, you're not worried about your coordinator bolting for a head job, because he's done such a great job developing the new quarterback. But is it more exciting than when they've had Ryan Fitzpatrick or Case Keenum or frankly, Dwayne Haskins, like, going into the season? It absolutely is. I think it's, you know, I think they're in a rare position where they can have a successful season that makes people more excited without winning 10 games. Like, there's a scenario where they go 6-11, that's probably pretty realistic, but you go, okay, we don't have to worry about the quarterback anymore. And in a best case scenario, you're like, holy cow, Dan Quinn can develop defensive players, and this unit looks like it will improve. We just need more talent. And then go beyond that, like, oh my gosh, we have a real roster builder in place. Somebody who looked at the old roster and was like, these players are terrible. I need new ones, and I'm not afraid to take the former staff's number one pick from 2 years ago and deal him within the division, because I think he's junk. Like, I think that if all of those things happen, you could get to the end of the season being like, okay, now we're going to 2025, and we're really excited because we trust this regime in bringing in the right kind of pieces to fill out a roster that is competitive in the division. I think the expectations would change going into next year.
Barry, was Ron Rivera worse as a coach or a personnel guy? I don't know which one he was worse at, to be honest.
I mean, get a shovel and just dig to the bottom. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, I wrote this, Ron's a nice guy, and that, you know, it's terrible to kind of dump on him, but it's also realistic. Like, the most astonishing thing about his regime, I think, is how bad it got and how bad the roster was at the end. I mean, maybe Emmanuel Forbes is going to become Deion Sanders, but, like, it just doesn't feel like they made one good decision roster-wise. So I honestly, like, I haven't seen the mismanaged timeouts in a long time, so maybe I'm burying how bad he was in game, but, like, I think he did more damage to the franchise in the roster. Mm-hmm. I think that's unquestionable, right? Like, it had to be a full rebuild because he, you know, Jahan Dotson is the example, right? Like, they looked at him 2 years after being drafted at, I think, number 16, and said, let's trade him for a third and a couple sevenths and throw in a fifth in the division because he's just not part of the solution here. That's fairly damning.
Barry, I just want to push back a little bit on the on your idea of the coaching staff. And again, take what I say with a grain of salt because I'm a homer and I get excited as we get closer. But I think in hindsight, I'm glad we didn't get that dweeb from Detroit.
Ben Johnson, how dare you? That's my guy.
Listen, I wanted an offensive guy too, but that guy's personality blows. Quinn, on the other hand, has got this infectious, enthusiastic personality, like true leader of men. You see the guys on the sidelines responding. Like, this is his... I think the team takes on the persona of their coaches, right? Ron was of arms folded, kind of just get through the games guy. The team, I thought they showed that. This team, Tress Way's making a play, they're going nuts. Tracy McSorley's making a hit, they're going nuts. I just see a different enthusiasm. And then we've got, for Jaden, we've got Cliff Kingsbury, an offensive guy. We don't have to worry about coaching defense, worry about managing anything. He could focus on the offense, focus on his quarterback. Joe Witt, I know guys that meet with Joe, they say this guy's enthusiasm's off the chart. His intensity, it's just a totally different. I think this group might actually be the perfect tonic for this moment for this franchise.
You're just a sunny presence in the world. I don't disagree. And I will say this about Quinn. And one of the things that impressed me, you know, he walks in here. I don't know him. I don't really, you know his personality. Atlanta, I know what happened there. But I think there are guys who lose their jobs, their first head coaching jobs, and Ron Rivera would fit into this category, and think, you know, I got screwed there. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to run this back, and it's going to work in a different situation. And Dan Quinn was very frank, saying, I came out of that Atlanta situation. I knew I had to go back and be a defensive coordinator, which he did, obviously, in Dallas. And I had to examine what happened there and pick out the problems and look at the mistakes I made so that if I got a chance again, I didn't make those mistakes again. And I think that when you're, I mean, he's like our age, right? He's early 50s or whatever. When you're able to do that in mid-career and mid-life, like that shows a maturity and kind of an intellect that I think is important and leads me to believe that it doesn't mean you're just getting the guy who went to a Super Bowl in Atlanta, blew a big lead, then was not very good, and got fired mid-season. Like he could have developed. And I also agree, Eric, like the surrounding cast of coaches is probably the best here since, you know, Mike Shanahan had all the, you know, young geniuses to be, which was like a dozen years ago. So I'm not opposed to the optimistic view at all. I'm really interested to see what is the vibe and the feeling about the entire operation when you get to the end of this season, because I think we could, if everything goes right and you believe in the coaches and you believe in Adam Peters and Daniels is the solution, we could be sitting here next August having a completely different conversation, a conversation that is not very familiar in August in Washington, D.C. as it regards to the NFL team.
Barry, we really appreciate you coming on with short notice, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Great stuff. Thanks, you, Barry.
Guys. Appreciate it. Yep. Anytime.
All right. Barry's Verluga from the Washington Post. Check out his latest column. The next step in the Nationals rebuild, bring back Juan Soto. Don't forget. At 9:20, Chelsea Janes, also from the Washington Post, will join us here on The Fan. So yesterday, post-show, Valdez is getting everybody in a tizzy yesterday. It was a scene.
He likes to do this. He likes to he likes to just kind of come up with these outrageous scenarios.
He walks into the studio. He goes, I think there's a dead guy in the bathroom. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, there's a guy in the stall. He hasn't moved. His legs haven't moved. No,
I said, well,
sound.
Maybe he's just on his phone. He goes, no, he hasn't moved at all. I would have heard it. Well, maybe, like, his headphones.
I was like, what?
I also don't talk like that.
Right. I know you don't. It's called embellishment.
So I don't know what was going on yesterday, but the bathroom situation was a mess. There was duty all over the seats.
Multiple seats.
There was non-flushing going on. It's the weekend.
Remember,
there must
we busted Chepe a couple of years ago because he was reading all the stuff that's how you could get the virus is from flushing toilets, and he wasn't flushing.
All I know is
that was 4 years ago.
Chepe is very consistent. I've seen him come out of the stall not once, twice already. And that was at about 7:30 today.
You've seen him twice today?
Twice today.
Two duties in the morning.
One before the show even started, and one at about 7:15.
But the stalls were a mess. There was really only two clean ones yesterday. The one that's all the way down there, the big luxurious Cadillac of stalls, and the one right next to it. And I go in there after the show to do my normal post-show business.
Yep.
And there's a guy that's already in there. I see his Puma shoes. Poking underneath the stall. And so I go in there and I'm doing my business, and it's kind of etiquette typically that the first one in is usually the first one out, because no one wants to have the awkward eye contact and the awkward sink encounter after you guys just destroyed the toilets together.
Try to avoid that if you can.
I think it's kind of an unwritten rule.
So you were waiting for him to get up and leave.
So I was waiting for him to get up and leave so I can make all my sounds and everything. And then he's just not moving the entire time.
Did you flush while you were making your sounds?
No, I just made the sounds.
Oh, okay.
And then he's not moving while I'm making sounds. Yeah. There's no sounds coming from him. His feet aren't wiggling. His toes aren't wiggling. His feet aren't moving. There's nothing coming just out of that stall.
Inactivity.
It's like
thought it was like Elvis.
It was almost like someone put a crash test dummy on the stall.
Like a mannequin.
Yeah, it was Weekend at Bernie's. Right. Okay. And I go in, and so finally I finish up, and I get out of there, and I come back, and I go, dude, I think the guy in the stall might be dead or passed out.
This is Matt Valdez.
Something's going on, to the point where Cakes goes in to check on the guy in the stall.
Mm-hmm. Now, my checking was very suspect.
Like, brief.
I walked in.
You didn't poke your head underneath, did you?
No, but I walked around the corner, and I did one of these.
Oh, my God.
You did look
close.
Down.
I was 10 feet away, 10 or 12 feet away. I was right near the sinks.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't. I should have been like, hey, man, are you okay?
Dude, he can for sure see you just through the cracks in the door.
No. Because I was off to the side. Like,
he was veered off to the side.
I was near the trash can. If there was a dead guy in there, I wasn't trying to get too close. Yeah. Trust me.
Dead's an exaggeration. But there was definitely a 10% chance a guy was passed out on the toilet.
Right. All right.
But, and then what happened? What did you see, Cakes?
So his shoes never moved.
I just saw
never
stationary
moved.
Pair
so
of...
So weird.
I think they were Adidas. He claimed they were Puma.
I think they're Puma.
Sure,
right.
But they didn't move when I was staring at them for five or ten seconds.
This guy was motionless on the toilet for 30 minutes minimum. I'm not exaggerating.
Maybe have you ever figured out who the...
I don't know who it was.
...perpetrator?
So then you went back 20 minutes later and
he was gone? I went back because I wanted to go check on him. I said, I'm going to go do some work. All right, and I'm going to finish up, and when I finish up some of the work, I'm just going to go in and check and see if the guy's still there. And then I went in, it was probably 50 minutes after that, gone. So
what time? Hold on, what time was this?
10 o'clock.
10:15?
It was right at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Because the pool of people that it could be is very limited because sales staff wasn't here.
Yeah. Right. I would have gone around and done a shoe check afterwards and find out who it was.
It could have been, who does the 10 o'clock on El Sol?
I don't know, but there's a guy that comes up around that time.
Yeah, the big
dude. Stairwell, yeah.
Yeah, it might have been that guy.
I'm not sure who
he would have missed some of his shift, though, because he was in there for like 20 minutes.
That's true.
It was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
He had me convinced that there was somebody.
I'm
going to
do a shoe check. I'm going to go walk around and do a shoe check.
Well, there's a dispute if it's Adidas or Puma.
Yeah,
now.
It's 100% it's Puma.
What color?
It's gray and black.
Gray and black, yeah.
Oh, just the old school, like...
No, not the old school. They look kind of like almost like a mesh shoe.
Yeah.
Almost like a runner shoe.
Okay.
Could have been.
Trying to narrow down the list.
It's not
of
Chepe
suspects.
Because Chepe is the loudest YouTuber in the world.
Yeah. Chepe plays his phone. He goes on the.
He calls
his wife. I mean, or whatever. I mean,
he handles business on the toilet.
Yeah, he really does.
So gross.
Was the person wearing jeans or were they shorts?
Jeans.
Could have been Daniel.
It could have been
engineer.
Daniel.
The newer engineer.
Prime offender. I've caught him in the stalls before.
You've caught him.
Call him Daniel.
Yeah. Roger of New Kicks.
Rodgers very distinct.
He's got the chucks. He always has chucks.
He walks like a duck.
Yeah, his feet like fold in 20 different ways.
Splayed out. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It's almost like he's having a stigmata.
I'm gonna guess Daniel.
Daniel's a great.
I think it might be Daniel.
Yeah, and he's an engineer. Probably, if there's no fire, there's nothing crazy going on. What does he do?
Put out fires.
He just puts out fires all the time.
Yeah, or gives me batteries.
Yeah, it's just duty, put out a fire.
Still getting free batteries. I like it.
Yep.
Right, I like that hustle.
You know what? It was Daniel.
Well, he's the Navy SEALs of poopers. It's all in quiet. Yeah. In the cover of darkness.
Very stealthy.
Yeah, very stealthy.
Yeah, good
for
him.
Why don't you go find him? He's probably here.
You want it?
He doesn't get here until about 9:30.
Oh, that's probably.
Oh, you know what? That syncs up with the time.
Yeah,
the time
get here. He settles in a little bit.
He gets in the 9 o'clock hour.
Yeah. Mm. If we see him, we'll bring Daniel in. He's one of our newer engineers.
We'll give him a thorough interrogation.
Right, because I don't really know Daniel's deal.
I don't know much about him either.
He's from Georgia.
What else do you know? Does he have kids?
Good dude, and I think he's getting married.
He's pretty quiet.
Yeah, he's quiet. So I just have a nice cordial. How you doing? Yeah. That's the extent, though. I haven't really delved into the personal life.
Nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Whenever you talk about Stalls, I always think about that senator. But he claimed it was just
stance. If I go into Stalls and do business, I want to make sure my feet are like a guy like a ski jump. Those feet are nice and tucked.
No, but I think it's not just the wide stance. It's that there was like a tapping.
There's tapping.
There was some sort of signal, like Morse code or something.
Well, I'm looking at it. It says the police officer said that. So the police officer was like a sting operation. The police officer was in the next stall.
Right.
And the senator started peeking through the crack of the door of the stall.
If you're just having like nervous feet and you're just tapping, tapping your feet unbeknownst, and there's a signal that somebody picks up on, and then one thing leads to another, and then the guy's trying to get in the stall with you.
Can I tell you a funny story?
God forbid.
You know, you mentioned Chepe's on the phone all the time.
Yeah,
like, he plays his like whatever he's watching on TV. He plays all that stuff loud. I've heard him on the phone. He's like at work on the phone.
This sounds like the bathroom when Chepe's in there.
I know someone. I won't say who. Who was on the toilet, and they saw on the caller ID it was a potential job opportunity.
Okay.
They were being offered a job.
Yeah.
And they couldn't miss the call, so they had to answer the phone on the toilet and, like, flush the toilet at some point to finish the conversation and get up. So in other words, they received a job offer and they're talking and everything, and they had to flush the toilet in the middle of a call. Can you imagine?
That's awkward. It's an awkward bit. But hey, if you need to close the job interview, I guess you have to take the call on the toilet.
Crazy. All right, we got Chelsea Jane coming up at 9:20, right?
Yeah.
Should I jump into EP next? What do you think, Drabby?
Yeah, let's do some EP, and then we'll talk with Chelsea Janes, national baseball writer for the Washington Post. She will join us coming up at 9:20 right here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.